We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall never surrender until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of people.
In times of universal deceit, truth is the only rebellion left. On today's show, Twitter sensation Freddie Bentley says that students today, millennials, Gen Zers, no longer want to learn about World War II in schools because it upsets them and it damages their collective psyche. I revisit Eric Voglin in response to this, and I also talk about my recent trip to Philadelphia. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. Welcome to today's show. As I said, I'm going to talk about Freddie Bentley. He's a Twitter sensation. He's got more followers than all of us combined on Twitter. He's an influencer, a thought influencer for Gen Zers, millennials, and anybody else who cares to listen to him, I suppose. He recently went on television in Good Morning Great Britain, and he challenged both American and Great Britain's teachers, telling them that the students today don't want to be taught about World War II in the classroom. They want the schools to abandon that aspect of history because it scares them, it upsets them, and it damages their collective psyche. I'll deal with that news story here in a second. I'm also going to talk to you about the fact that I just returned from Philadelphia, and I visited some of the iconic places such as Independence Hall, the Liberty Bell, and whatnot. And I'm going to share with you my response to that, my reaction to what I was told and what I read while I was there. I'm also going to spend some time talking about Eric Voglin again. We talked about him a week or so ago, and this week's commentary in the Washington Times was a deeper dive into Voglin and how he has a direct impact. His writing should have a direct impact on the way you digest today's news and the way you prepare for November 3rd. Real quick, remember that you can subscribe to The Rebellion by going to patreon.com/Dr. Everett Piper. patreon.com/DREVERETTPIPER. Subscribe to The Rebellion. There are various different levels available to you. If you subscribe at the higher levels, you'll get a free autographed copy of my book, Not a Daycare, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning Truth. And this is a direct response to Freddie Bentley's snowflake outcry that somehow learning about World War II is a bad thing rather than a good thing. So if you'd like an autographed copy of Not a Daycare, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning Truth, you can subscribe to The Rebellion at that level, and also you get a newsletter, you get video updates from me, as well at the highest level, you can engage in real-time dialogue, Q&A, iron sharpening iron, as the Rebellion community goes on Skype or Zoom once a month to engage in those dialogues and those questions and answer times. Okay, back to the show. I'm trying to do less of that housekeeping, and you'll notice that several of my shows recently, I haven't done any. I've just gone directly into the show because I'm trying to give you a reprieve. But I also know that I've got new listeners, and I want the rest of you to be patient with me as I update them on how to engage with The Rebellion and how to continue to contact us. Don't forget my website, DrEverettPiper.com. That's DREVERETTPIPER.com. All right, this story, it's in the DailyMox.com. Other news outlets picked it up. I'm going to read portions of this story, if not the whole thing, to you because it's brief, but it is the poster child of everything wrong that's wrong with the upcoming voter demographic in the West, the United States, Great Britain, and otherwise. This kid, this millennial, I don't know how old he is. He may be a Gen Zer rather than a millennial. In other words, he may be younger than a millennial. By the appearance of this photo here, that may be the case. I'm going to say he's in his 20s. All right. He recently, I said Twitter, I was wrong. It's Instagram, but he has a huge Twitter following too. So the headline is, students no longer want to learn about World War II because it upsets them. A young Instagram influencer, quote unquote, has an important message for all the teachers in America. Stop teaching youngsters about World War II. because the Second World War involved the Nazis and concentration camps and all those very, very bad things that killed millions of innocent people, a 22-year-old Instagram influencer thinks that it's too intense, that's his language, too intense, quote-unquote, of a conflict to teach millennials. The snowflake argues, argues that teaching young people about World War II would hit millennials' mental health and do damage to their collective psyche. Because this young man appeared on television to share his controversial view about education in World War II, he was met with a lot of resistance, but that's what 22-year-old reality TV star Freddie Bentley wanted to have happen when he went on Good Morning Great Britain, and he argued that schools across Great Britain and America need to go easier on their younger population and stop teaching them about the deadly conflict that thrust Europe into the violence of World War II. It was a hard situation, World War II, says Bentley. I don't want anyone to think I'm being disrespectful. I remember learning it as a child and thinking, oh my, this is so intense, unquote. Because Bentley is a popular figure among young people and social media addicts, he managed to reach a lot of people. Many people on Twitter attacked Bentley's comments. One person writing, "You need to learn some respect, young man." Other people shared similar comments on Twitter about Bentley's comments that the historic victory of the Allies who vanquished the Nazis and how teachers need to go easy on their kids who are desperate to learn that stuff. "Are you having a laugh?" one person wrote. "Not talking about World War II in school? Not educating them on what went wrong so it doesn't happen again? You need to learn some respect, young man." Another person wrote, "This kid is an idiot. What has the Second World War got to do with mental health?" Interesting. "This made me so angry," said one person. "Without people fighting the war, then idiots like this kid wouldn't have the right to do what or be who they want. They fought for our freedom. So learn about it, you cretin." So he got attacked greatly, which is, I don't think people should be mean and disrespectful. I think there's a better way to counter somebody's stupidity and foolish comments than to call them names. But nonetheless, it's encouraging that people had righteous indignation over this young person's foolishness, his comments about not learning history because it's too intense and it could damage the collective psyche of those people learning about Hitler, the Nazi regime, National Socialism, and Auschwitz, Dachau, and the other concentration camps. Lost my train of thought there for a second. So what's the point? The point is this stuff is pervasive. This is something I've talked about frequently on this show. I'm going to go back. I got to say it again. Ideas always have consequences. Garbage in, garbage out. Bad ideas, bad culture. Good ideas, good culture. The ideas that we inculcate in our schools, in our kids, in our progeny, in the next generation are going to bear themselves out in the reality of what we see in the nightly news. And the proof of that is the Black Lives Matter lunacy, the craziness that's going on right now, and the actual defense of that by the intelligentsia, by the media, by the political left, that somehow Black Lives Matter is a peaceful organization that is engaging peaceful protests, when right before your very eyes, you see that that's not true. You see that they're rioting, they're looting, they're burning car dealerships, they're intimidating, they're threatening, they're shouting hateful comments. They're, as I covered in a show recently, they're marching through the streets of North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, chanting "F your Jesus." And it's not just F, they're saying the whole word. "F your Jesus, F your Jesus." That's incredible. That's incredible that that's what this organization stands for. But yet we have the talking heads on the mainstream media telling us that this is all cool, this is all good, this is all for the nobility of social justice, and it's all peaceful. This is hate. This is vitriolic hate. This is Christophobia. This is fear of Christianity. This is hate of Christianity. And it's anti-Semitic, too. We know that Black Lives Matter is an anti-Semitic organization by their own by their own admission and their own chartered documents. We know that they're a Marxist organization. I've talked to you about what Marxism stands for, and that Marxism, by definition, is grounded in class conflict, racial conflict, and this identity politics. You could argue that Marxism perhaps is the seedbed of identity politics and everything that's wrong with it, because it pits one group of people against another based on your subjective identity. Rather than accepting the Judeo-Christian definition of humanity, Marxism breaks that down and says, no, you're not made in the image of God. You're nothing but the product of radical Darwinism. You rose up out of the primordial soup. You have no more moral significance than a dog, a pig, a cat, a cow, amoeba, or a virus. And therefore, it's survival of the fittest. And we all should celebrate whoever rises to the top, the fit that survive. Marxism led to Hitler's debauchery. Hitler's unconscionable acts against his fellow human beings were grounded in his admiration for Karl Marx, the Communist Manifesto, and Das Kapital. Now you say, well, he fought against communism. Well, yes, he did, but he fought against Stalin. He didn't fight against Marxism per se. He actually admired the works of Karl Marx, and he recognized that this class conflict would bear great fruit if he could use it to his advantage and pit the Aryan race against the Jews and the gypsies, and anybody else that stood in their way in defense of the Jews. You get my point? Bad ideas lead to very bad consequences. And this kid, Freddie Bentley, doesn't want to be taught about the consequences of those bad ideas because it scares him. It frightens him. It's going to damage the collective conscience of his generation. What a boatload of nonsense. It makes no sense. Again, a repeated message on this show is George Santayana. Those who don't learn the lessons of history are damned to repeat them. And obviously, these people that were responding negatively to Freddie Bentley know that. They know that. So I'm going to go and talk to you right now about my commentary in the Washington Times this week, because I revisited Eric Voglin, who we've talked about at some length here on this show, as the context for that commentary. And I think it'll drive the point home with regard to bringing closure to this Freddie Bentley snowflake rebellion, microaggression, you triggered me, you hurt my feelings, you scared me, you frightened me, stop talking about big, bad, ugly things because you're damaging my psyche. Oh, jeez. All right. I titled my article this week in the Washington Times, "The Revolution or Revelation, You Choose." And so here is it in a synopsis. I won't go through it verbatim, but I'm going to use my article as context, as a crib sheet for the next 5 minutes of commentary here. Basically, I'm saying this in my article, which came out today in the Washington Times, and I'm recording this on Sunday, so you guys will be hearing this on Monday, so you can go to the Washington Times easily and access this. So quickly, the choice between socialism, defined by race and class conflict, and the new science of politics, which is what Eric Voglin argued for back in the early 1900s. Voglin was born in 1901, remember? I told you that. Then in 1919, he enrolled in the University of Vienna, and guess what? He studied Karl Marx, and he read Das Kapital, and he embraced Marxism. So he's a young man, just like these millennials and then these Gen Zers that want to be cool and want to be socialists and want to be Bernie Bros. He embraced Marxism because he thought it was the solution to all of mankind's problems. But, guess what happened? 1901, 1919. You know your history here, don't you? The Bolshevik Revolution. The Bolshevik Revolution and its bloodlust played itself out in the streets right under Eric Voglin's nose. And he watched it. He learned of it. He read of it. And he concluded that he was wrong. That this worldview that led to that violence, that hate, that conflict, that division rather than that unity, he concluded he was wrong. So he embraced Marxism as a young man, and then he abandoned it shortly thereafter because of its assumptions of race and class conflict. And therefore, he became a member of the Austrian Economics Clan. In addition to having a firsthand account of the ways of Vladimir Lenin and the Bolshevik Revolution, Voglin also had a front row seat to who? Again, you can figure this one out. He's a young man, and he's 18 years old in 1919, so he wouldn't be that old in the 1920s, 1930s. So he understood the ideology of Adolf Hitler. He had a front row seat to Adolf Hitler's rise to power.
So he understood National Socialism inside and out. Voegelin did. In fact, the year Hitler rose to full power, Voegelin published two books refuting the key premise of the Nazi Party. What was his premise? Race theory. Sound familiar? Race theory. That one race was superior to another because of its melanin. Have you heard that before? BLM, Nick Cannon, etc., they say that white people are subhuman. This is their language. This is their language. If you didn't listen to my earlier show, you need to listen. This is their language. White people are subhuman because they lack melanin. They have the wrong color of skin. This is Adolf Hitler par excellence. This is not Nazi socialism. This is Mein Kampf, and frankly, it's Marxism, survival of the fittest, the division of people rather than the unity of the Mako Dei. All right, Voegelin argued that because Hitler and the mindless lemmings, these millions of people that followed him, had the definition of man wrong, that everything else in their political system was ontologically and morally fraudulent. Ontology is reality. Remember that? So it was fraudulent. It was disconnected from reality. The political system of Hitler wasn't grounded in what was real. It was grounded in a social construct. And that construct was Aryan supremacy, racism, class conflict, radical Marxism, radical Darwinism, the survival of the fittest. We shall prevail. We will crush everyone else. German socialism's premise that man was divisible by race, genetics, and shades of melanin was nothing but what? Propaganda. Voegelin argued for a new science of politics, grounded in the admission that all human beings are the Imago Dei, made in the image of God, and not merely evolved swampoos. Political life, said Voegelin, must represent the truth of humanity and not fall prey to the modern propensity of intellectual assassination. Voegelin, intellectual assassination, and you see that every night on the news. This is lunacy. This stuff is irrational. It makes no sense. It's ideological vacuous, and it's intellectual assassination, fueled by whatever's popular and in vogue on a given day. This was Voegelin. I've got more to say on him, but we need to take a break right now and acknowledge our sponsors. So let's take 2 minutes, and I'll be right back and dig deeper into Voegelin as a response to Freddie Bentley, the Snowflake Rebellion, and the cry to stop teaching World War II because it scares us. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. Okay, welcome back to The Rebellion. Obviously, I'm on Eric Voegelin right now. Let's go back and do this really quick. I'd like to spend maybe a little time on Philadelphia, if I have time at the end of the show. If not, we'll deal with it tomorrow, because it ties directly into this story and the fact that we haven't taught the truth about our founding fathers and who we are as a nation. And if we don't know our history, then we're doomed to repeat some of the failures of our own, as well as the failures of everybody else. All right. So Voegelin, basically, remember what I said? He stood on the same platform as Aristotle some 2,000 years earlier, and Edmund Burke, let's say 200 years earlier, maybe 250. Both Aristotle, Edmund Burke, and then comes along Voegelin, and then you've got G.K. Chesterton, and you've got C.S. Lewis. You've got this train of conservative thinkers who recognize that the only good political system that we've ever devised as a human race is grounded in revelation. That's my point in this article. Revelation and not social constructs. For the Jews, we know what the revelation was. It was given in the law of Moses and the prophets. For Christians, this is the beauty of the Christian faith. For Christians, this revelation of God is God himself. The revelation with a capital R literally became a man in body, intellect, soul, and spirit, the form of Jesus Christ, the Word made flesh and dwelling among us, God incarnate. And that revelation, that man, Jesus Christ, that Godhead, that second person of the Trinity extended that revelation to the entire world beyond the Jewish nation. Voegelin knew all of this, and he knew that a nation closing its mind to revelation was akin to a man closing his soul to disprove God, or a choir closing its ears to disprove music. In other words, Voegelin understood the power of revelation versus revolution. All right, Voegelin also understood that progressives, with their claims of superior knowledge, I want you to hear me on this because I'm going to shift to Gnosticism in my close on this point on Voegelin, which is a direct repudiation of Freddie Bentley, too. Voegelin also understood that progressives, with their claims to superior knowledge, okay, progressives think they're smart, they're the elite ones, they know more than you and me, we're the deplorables, we're the rubes, we lack gray matter, we just need to shut up and do what we're told because these people are smart enough to tell us how to live our lives. That's the Democratic Party, that's Kamala Harris, that's Joe Biden, that's the reality of the left. They're the elites. Hillary Clinton, you're deplorable. Don Lemon, you're a rube. I'll laugh at you. I'll mock you. You know this. You know the routine. But this political system, this idea of Gnosticism, gnosis, special knowledge, being smarter than everybody else and being exclusive, you own this knowledge and other people just can't get there. It's a discredited religion. It's as old, it's 2,000 years old. It's one of the first things the Christians had to confront was the apostasy, the heresy of Gnosticism, because it was creeping into the church even in the first century. They degraded the human body. This is what Gnostics did. In fact, they denied the material. Transgenderism, men can be female and women can be male. Children can identify as something they're not. This is a denial of the body. It's a denial of the beauty of the body. That's Gnosticism. We're living in a time where Gnosticism is rising up in a revival right before our very eyes. It's a narcissistic self-worship, elevating emotions over the rational, where these people actually become gods unto themselves. They are sure that nothing is sure. They know that nothing can be known other than what they know. You hear the branch being sawed at? Well, they're just sawing it off. Their dismissal of sin, they deny that sin exists, leads them to believe that anything they do can't be sin, and that includes defaming and hating all who stand in the way of their sin. Voegelin knew all this, and he knew that one of the most characteristic things about Gnostics is that they think they're always right. They have all the right ideas, and furthermore, they have the right to condemn you for thinking that you're right. Because they're right for thinking they're right, but you're wrong for thinking you're right. So they condemn you for thinking you're right. And they're right in doing so. Again, sawing away at the branch upon which they sit. They deny morality, and then they rise above the moral order in their superior, what? Morality. BLM? Got it? They're the moral ones. They're the virtuous ones, even though they deny the objective truth of morality. They claim that morality is relative, it is an objective revelation, it's a social construct, but that yet they're the moral ones and you're the immoral one, even though they claim there's no such thing as morality. It's all about their feelings is the major point there. White privilege is real because they say so. They feel it is. Systematic racism is real because they say so. Critical race theory is unproven, but it's proven in their mind. The science of climate change is unchallengeable regardless of the science that might challenge it. Sexual fluidity. Let me repeat that. Sexual fluidity is a fact because you're born that way. And that's a fact. And it's not fluid. I mean, it's just nonsense. It's a dog chasing its tail. Are you getting dizzy yet? Damn all the evidence to the contrary. Evidence is meaningless. Damn all the evidence. Everything is as they say and feel. Anyone who doesn't see this doesn't have gnosis, doesn't have knowledge. You're stupid, you're deplorable, you're a rube, you like gray matter, just shut up. Vote for me, I'll take care of you, foolish people. Because I'm fit and you're not. I'll survive, you won't. Disagreeing, this is the nature of BLM. If you disagreed with the Gnostics, it just proved that they had gnosis and you didn't. Same thing, same exact thing with critical race theory, intersectionality, and this nonsense of BLM. You're inferior, you're of the wrong race, you are of the wrong gender, you are the wrong color, you're just wrong. You're just wrong. And if you open your mouth to say, well, I don't think I am, that proves you're wrong. W.E. Du Bois said this because he claimed that there was only a talented tenth. What are you supposed to do with all the other 90%? He claimed that you build society on the talented tenth. The talented tenth. Remember that when people talk in admiration about W.E. Du Bois. The talented tenth? What about the other 90%? Margaret Sanger said that she wanted to get rid of the inferior class and races. Mao said, you were of the wrong age. He wanted to get rid of the people that are older because they had a tendency to be more mature and challenge the status quo or challenge his thinking. Thus, he unleashed the emotions of the Cultural Revolution, the young people. Hitler said, you were the wrong genes. So, Du Bois, Sanger's, Mao, Hitler, remember this about all of them. They had a solution for you. They had a solution for you. And it's called the gulag. It's called eugenics. It's called the Cultural Revolution. It's called the furnace, my land. Freddie, it's called the furnace, my land. You might want to listen to this, Freddie Bentley, because if you don't, you are going to be repeating the same butchery that has repeated itself over and over again throughout the course of human history. Why? Because there is such a thing as human sin. There is such a thing as objective facts. King Solomon talked about this in Ecclesiastes. He said, there's nothing new under the sun. Well, there's nothing new under the sun. None of this foolishness, none of this Freddie Bentley nonsense, Black Lives Matter nonsense, none of this snowflake rebellion and microaggression and curling up in a corner in a fetal position, none of this is new. It's all just a repeat of human sin over and over again. Gnosticism, 2,000 years old, here we are again. Racism, racial superiority, BLM, Nick Cannon, white people lack melanin, racial superiority, Hitler, racial conflict, Marxism, Das Kapital, Communist Manifesto. This is not new. This is not new. Rising up and declaring yourself to be as God, Robespierre, Diderot, French Revolution. It's not new. It is not new. Voegelin confronted all of this with his new science of politics, which was his argument to return to the old science of Aristotle, Burke, and the classics. That was Voegelin's argument, because he saw that there's nothing new under the sun, and that this nonsense, this crap, need to be confronted with, here's the take-home, revelation. This November, on November 3rd, you and I have never had, in my view, we've never had a more important decision to make. I know we say that every election season, but this one is just so ugly. You've never had a more important decision to make. You can vote for the new science of Eric Voegelin, in other words, grounded in the law of nature and nature's God, or you can vote for the science of intellectual assassination that's grounded in gnosis and the worship of men who think they are God. Revelation or revolution? You decide. You decide in November. And your liberty, and maybe even your life, may depend on it. Tomorrow, we'll cover more of this story, and I'll get into my trip to Philadelphia and how it relates to all of this. Thanks for listening today. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion.